yourself a song to sing, and sing it till you're done. Yeah, sing it hard and sing it well. Send the robber barons straight to hell. The greedy thieves who came around and ate the flesh of everything they found, whose crimes have gone unpunished now, walk the streets a-screaming now.
Greetings, all you 99 percenters. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. Okay, the topic today is going to be one of resistance. You know, alternative visions means not just my alternative analysis of what's going on in the global economy and the U.S. economy, the labor movement, and so forth. It means giving voices to other folks who are actually doing something and not just talking about it. And that's what we've got today on our show. We're fortunate to have a guest, and he'll report on what's going on with an important conference here in California of resistance by the Latino and other immigrant communities. And I'm not going to sort of take advantage of the subject. I'm going to let him talk about it here, but our guest is Alan Benjamin. Alan is a longtime activist in the Latino community and a delegate to the San Francisco Labor Council, Progressive Labor Council here in California. Well, so is the L.A. Labor Council. We have a couple, active labor councils that are very much involved with the immigrant communities here, and doing and have been doing for some time some very good work in supporting the Latino and other immigrant communities, have played a big role in the surge and unionization of these communities over recent decades here. And that, of course, has helped transform the politics in California from what was decades ago pretty right-wing and reactionary, dominated by Republicans. And now we have more of a progressive governments here in California. That's in relationship comparison to the rest of the country, of course, and other parts of the country, in particular the South and the Midwest. But, you know, I don't want to create the image that the California government is progressive, but it certainly is not as reactionary, and it is supported the idea of sanctuary cities, which are now coming under attack aggressively by the Trump administration. And we have a resistance to that at the grassroots. It's not just politicians, it's the grassroots resistance that is underpinning and supporting some of these politicians' moves in California not to drift into the reactionary mode that is seems to be swamping much of the rest of the country here ever since Trump got hold of the presidency. And okay, so I want to introduce Alan Benjamin, and Alan's going to tell us about this conference. I believe it's in Southern California somewhere, but the conference is not just a you know, academics getting together and talking to themselves. This is an organizing event, if I'm correct here, and this is the product of real grassroots organizing and efforts that are building, and the various organizations are coming together here in this conference, and if I'm correct, planning future actual efforts and events, which is very important because the problem with, in my view, the left in the U.S. is that it's been running around for years on very chaotic single-issue campaigns and has gotten trapped into the Democratic identity politics swamp rather than uniting people together in one common effort here, where their individual issues can have a greater influence and impact when people unite. You see, that's the problem with American progressive politics, the lack of unity, and all these groups going off in different directions and not coming together under a single banner, United Front or whatever you want to call it, and then eventually a single party, independent party. Until all that happens, United Front at the grassroots level and then a party, independent party, nothing's really going to change here. It's just going to be a single-issue reaction to offenses that are being driven by the elites in this country. Anyway, that's my say, and I'd like to have a discussion here with Alan. He can tell us more what's going on. Tell us about the conference, Alan, and then tell us you know, what groups are involved and what they're trying to achieve. Just the big picture, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, thanks, Jack. It's an organizer's conference. It's coming together as a united front labor community, particularly among Latino workers and youth, to build a fight back, an independent fight back against NAFTA. One of the themes is cancel NAFTA. As you know, the renegotiations are taking place right now. It's the fifth session just concluded of renegotiations of this so-called free trade agreement that has been the framework within which a whole series of destructive policies, outsourcing, destruction of environment, the destruction of jobs on both sides of the border, pushing privatization. It's a whole ideological and legal construct that's been put into place, which is devastating. So cancel NAFTA, organizing against the wall, not just Trump's wall, but against all the framework of reactionary laws that have been pushing millions of people outside the country. So the theme is not one more deportation. These are deportations that took place under Democrats and Republicans. The Latino movement called Obama the deporter-in-chief. So the axis is, you know, this is not just about Trump. It's about the whole corporate ruling class assault on workers' rights. A theme is support workers' right to organize and unionization on both sides of the border. That has been a key issue in especially farm workers who've been denied the right to the union of their choice in San Quintin. And one of the big in Baja California, 70,000 farm workers who've been on sporadic strikes to demand a collective bargaining agreement, which the growers, Driscoll Corporation and its Mexican subsidiary, Berrymex, are refusing to sign. They're refusing to sign a collective bargaining agreement. They have a sweetheart agreement with one of these yellow unions. So the support for Driscoll's and the boycott is going to be at the center. Also, another important struggle is going to be at the center of our conference. Baldemar Velasquez, who's the president of the Farm Labor Organizing Committee based in Ohio, is going to be with us. He and his union have been organizing farm workers, mostly Latino farm workers, including some H-2A guest workers. They've been organizing them into their union in North Carolina, in Northern Florida in particular, but mostly in North Carolina, and in the tobacco industry. The bosses have gone on a rampage against his union. They're trying to outlaw his union outright. It's not just a question of right to work and denying and trying to break unions through that vehicle, and we can get into the question of right to work, but it's outright banning the union. And this was under the Democratic Party governor in North Carolina in alliance with the growers. And so Baldemar is going to be there to urge that we get on board a national boycott campaign for the J.R. Reynolds Views electronic cigarette. So big agenda. 9 workshops, keynotes from leadership and rank and file. It's a united front from above, from below. All activists are involved. We have, it's sponsored by the number of labor councils, as you mentioned, the San Francisco Labor Council, the Sacramento Labor Council, the Fresno Labor Council, and most important, the Los Angeles County Federation of Labor, which is labor council down south, and a number of local unions, SEIU locals, my own office professional employees local, California Faculty Association statewide. So there's a lot of organizational buy-in, in addition to just a slew of immigrant rights organizations. And so we're going to have some of the activists, some of the dreamers who are fighting for what they call a Clean Dream Act, that is, maintain the dreamers but without any concessions. As you know, Nancy Pelosi and Schumer reached a deal with the Trump administration that they would advocate for maintaining the Dream Act, that is, allowing the young dreamers who were born or brought to this country when they were kids, they could stay on. That's about 80,000 of them. But in exchange, she and Schumer, the Democrats, would support tightening border security, so-called, and accelerating the deportation process. And the young people were outraged. They said, rights, we want the right to stay here, but we're not going to sacrifice and demand that our parents' rights be curtailed. And they were angry. They confronted Pelosi and some of the organizers of the big demonstration in a press conference, which turned into a confrontation with Pelosi because she was lying through her teeth that she hadn't reached an agreement when the press had reported that she had. So she had to backtrack. But there's a resistance movement, Jack, that you don't hear much about, but that's out there organizing Fight for 15 and a union that is taking to the streets. And a lot of the young Latino activists, Black Lives Matter activists, they're outraged. So these are the people who are going to be coming together. It's an activist organizer conference. Our workshops are aimed at coming up with two, three key actions and campaigns that we can all unite around and urge our unions nationally to get behind. So it's not just a one-shot deal. It's the beginning and launching of what we hope will be a significant united front effort for mass action, independent action, organizing, challenging, and something that, of course, is going to pose the question of building our own independent political voice and ultimately our own independent political party. And it's not an accident that some of the key organizers are people who've been pushing for years for an independent labor party and independent working class politics. So it's going to be held at the California State University at Dominguez Hills, which is in Carson, California. Carson's sort of kind of halfway between downtown L.A. and Long Beach. It's really about 40 minutes from downtown L.A. by car. In the general, you know, about 20 minutes from LAX. And it's going to be at the university there. We wanted to do it at a university because we wanted the university to be able to issue the invitations to a lot of our sisters and brothers from Mexico. It's a binational conference, so there are going to be activists coming from all over Mexico. Unfortunately, and I want to make this clear on your show, unfortunately, the U.S. government denied visas to farm worker leaders and healthcare and teacher unionists from southern Mexico and Chiapas who've been organizing. And we got letters from the university. We got letters of invitation from all the labor federations. We had very, very long, arduous, you know, campaign to get them their visas, and they were denied the visas on the grounds that they were not considered credible people and that they would most likely jump ship and try to stay in the United States when these are people who have a huge base and they're organizing in their own countries. So we're going to be organizing press conferences next week to demand that the government change and offer and provide visas for these activists. You know, the theme of NAFTA is capital can cross borders. Well, we say workers should cross borders as well. We don't recognize this border. And these are workers who have stories to tell of hardships that were imposed by our government, decimation of their industries, the privatization of their state enterprises, Pemex, oil, healthcare, ISSSTE and IMSS being decimated, all as a result of the policies of the various, you know, U.S. governments since 1994 and before. So we need their stories to be told. Of course, if they are not given visas, we've made arrangements with the university to Skype in their comments and their presentations over the big screen at the university. So it's kind of exciting. We hope your listeners will join us. It's December 2nd and 3rd in Los Angeles, in Carson more specifically. And you can get more information about it by going to binationalcampaign.org. It's not just a conference, it's a campaign, binational campaign, one word. And you can register by going to the main sponsor of our conference, Hermandad, H-E-R-M-A-N-D-A-D, Hermandad, which is brotherhood, sisterhood, Hermandad Mexicana, all one word, .org. And you can register for the conference, sign up for the different workshops, and please be there. If you want more information, you can call our organizer, Shelha López. That's X-E-L-H-A López, L-O-P-E-Z. And the phone number is 714-541-0250. Shella is based in Santa Ana, California, just south of L.A. So I think those are sort of the main points. Perhaps you have some questions or things that you might want to have further clarified, Jack?
Yeah, let me throw in my two cents and comment on some of the issues and the importance of it. And again, just let me repeat, if any are interested, hermandadmexicana.org, right? And 714-541-0254. And again,
0250, I'm sorry, 0250.
0250, okay, excuse me. Again, 714-541-0250. And, you know, if you're interested in doing something, not just sitting around and talking about it, I think this is, you know, one of the few things that are going on now where people are activists are actually doing something. And that's critically important now. Let me just comment on some of the themes here. Cancel NAFTA, yeah. Of course, NAFTA is negotiations are going on right now. And look, I've been saying when Trump was running for president that he is a free trader. He is not a multilateral free trader because he wants to show that he can come in and give a better deal for U.S. corporations. That's what all
That's
this
correct.
NAFTA negotiation is about. And they will throw the workers under the bus again, both Mexican and U.S., just as they did originally. This is a big cover here that he's going to bring jobs back. We've talked on the show before, like the Carrier Corporation deal, where when he came into office, he made a big deal, 1,000 jobs, but then it turned out that Carrier was actually cutting jobs, wasn't going to save
right.
jobs. And its initial promise in the press of saving 1,000 jobs turned out to be 300 jobs, not 1,000. And elsewhere, Carrier was laying off 600 people. So, you know, it's all smoke and mirrors here about NAFTA and all this free trade. He's a bilateral free trader, and we're going to see the outcome here. Will essentially mean a better deal for U.S. business and not necessarily
for
workers.
But if I may add something,
India.
Jack.
Yeah.
If I may add something, he was able to portray himself and to parade as an opponent of the free trade agreements. And he was able to point to the Democrats and to Hillary Clinton as the architect of all these agreements that are losing, you know, that are costing us our jobs. And so the charade and this whole portrayal of himself as the defender of jobs, it's a sham, but it won him votes. And the anger at the Democrats over being the architects of these plans over so many years hit home in a lot of these these states where, you know, the Rust Belt is set in. So, of course, I couldn't agree with you more. He's a bilateralist. He's dismantling TPP, and during his trip to China, he's trying to reestablish these bilateral free trade agreements. But the space that he was given to be able to present himself in this manner, as a populist, as keeping jobs, was due to the real capitulation of the Democratic Party to their voice. It's the voice piece, but it's the tragedy of it all is that you have somebody who claims to be populist and keeping jobs who's just simply dismantling them, as he did in Carrier, as you said.
Yeah, well, I was writing about this during the election and predicting that he would win months before. I think it was June or July I wrote articles about Trump free trade and working class discontent. And, he capitalized on that very cleverly. And the Democrats had set themselves up. They couldn't defend something after it was so obvious for so many years, the loss of jobs, millions and millions of jobs, were lost due to free trade treaties and so forth. And no one believed Hillary that she had switched her position on that. It was just political campaign lies on both ends here. Also, against the wall here, that's a great theme, and deportations, and as you pointed out, the Democrats were also the biggest deporters of anybody here under Obama. There is a deal that's been cooking. They haven't worked it out because they're preoccupied with giving tax cuts to billionaires and millionaires here, but it was... I believe, and you will see it occur, Dream Act Light. In other words, Trump will concede on some of that because, I mean, how are you going to deport tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of students that just can't? It's impossible logistically to do that. But the Democrats will agree to get Dream Act Light. They will agree to funding for a wall and other security stuff. You know, it's not just the wall, it's other tighter security spending along the border. So that will be the dirty deal. Something on paper that says Dream Act Light and agreeing to fund his wall. And that's coming on. It's coming on. And, it, you know, he just wants to be able to say he built the wall, even though building a wall is ridiculous. There's no wall that you can build in certain geographical areas, like over rivers and so forth. That's going to stop anything. And, they're not worried about stopping the flow of capital. That's what free trade is all about. It's the flow of capital and foreign direct investment, and then allowing U.S. corporations to send their products back that they made more cheaply without tariffs. You know, that's what free trade is really about. You mentioned another theme is the right to unionize on both sides of the border here, and the Driscoll boycott. Can you tell folks a little bit what the Driscoll boycott is and why they should support it?
Driscoll's berries, strawberries, blueberries, blackberries in particular, cranberries, a lot of consumers will be, you know, buying the Driscoll's cranberries over the holiday season. They produce a huge amount of produce from one of the very productive valleys in Baja California, just about 5 hours south of San Diego. And the workers there, mostly Oaxaqueños, these are people from the state of Oaxaca and neighboring Chiapas, who've been displaced by NAFTA. The NAFTA agreement led to the modification of the Mexican Constitution. The agreement was considered to be to proceed in significance and have more value than the Constitution. They dismantled the cooperatives, farmer cooperatives, the ejidos, and they dismantled, of course, unable to, you know, small farmers unable to compete with Iowa and Nebraska corn, just lost their farms. So a lot of them moved to the states and crossed the border and are working in the fields of Sonoma. Many of the Oaxaqueños lost everything during the big fires. But many weren't able to cross the border, and they settled in Baja California. So they're largely from the state of Oaxaca in southern Mexico. There are 80,000 of them, and they work in the most abominable slave-like, they call it slave-like conditions, 14, 16 hours a day, 100 degrees temperature. They women are abused, sexually harassed, raped by the different foremen, other workers. The conditions are just outrageous, and they, of course, Driscoll's is a huge corporation. They have a big PR campaign saying how well they treat workers. They have one of these company unions that, of course, vouches for them. But the reality is that it's atrocious. And they've been organizing. The government finally recognized their independent union. But the growers have refused to sit down and negotiate a collective bargaining agreement with them on the grounds that they already have a union. And
growers in the U.S. or in Baja?
This is the workers in Baja. In the U.S., Driscoll's has... It's also a union buster. They moved when workers began to organize. UFW and independent unions began to organize in the Central Valley. They shifted production south of the border, like, you know, they've done in auto and elsewhere, and where they had a more docile workforce. But this docile workforce woke up and they said, no, we don't want to work in these conditions, and we need rights, and we don't want this incredible sexual abuse of our women. That's a huge issue for them. And working with pesticides and that were banned in the United States, and birth deformities. It's a story that David Bacon and many, many journalists have taken up, but one that's not told in the mainstream media. And so our job is to get them on tour to tell their story, and to urge that at Costco's and Safeway's, consumers refuse to buy Driscoll's berries and to organize with the unions and community organizations, a real campaign, so that it's not just one more boycott that really doesn't go anywhere, you know, on the AFL-CIO boycott list, which is a joke, but which becomes a mass movement, which becomes a movement alongside these, like the Great Boycott was at one time, that activated me and many others to go out there and support the farm workers.
Yeah, these Driscoll berries, you know, they're very widespread in Costco's and Safeway's and so forth. But people shouldn't purchase them. There's alternatives there in those stores, and if they really want strawberries, they don't have to buy Driscoll's. You know, and it's pretty important boycott, I would say here, given the, you know, another thing you said that's interesting about the sexual harassment, and it's not just harassment of women who are working in the fields and so forth. It's worse than just harassment. It's so widespread going on. And, you know, we hear in the news and the media today, the elites, you know, the politicians, you know, and the public media figures and so forth engaging in all this disgusting harassment, sexual harassment of women at the, you know, well-to-do level, you might say, upper middle class and elite level. But where's the reporting about what's going on, you know, in at the working class level here, you know, in the fields and in the factories and so forth, where women are putting up with far worse. And it's much more widespread, even, and huge, huge numbers. But, you know, the media won't report on it. That's interesting, isn't it, I find. Anyway, that's just the comment on the side.
It's not the sexy story that they're looking for. It's working people, and it exposes the conditions, and it raises the question of who's responsible. There was no coverage, or very little coverage, of during the fires up in Sonoma and Napa areas, Santa Rosa, of tens of thousands of farm workers whose shacks or hovels were destroyed, who many of them don't have their papers, so they weren't able to make much of a case about it because they didn't want to be deported, but they lost everything. And fortunately, our council and many of the in East Bay Council, went on a big campaign to help the undocumented workers. But we sent stories, op-ed pieces, to the Chronicle and to other publications, and they were never printed.
Yeah,
surprise?
Doesn't have the cachet that some of these other issues are. And by the way, I think a survey was taken not too long ago by a reputable source here, and it's like 30% of women report some sort of sexual harassment, you know, at the hands of these predatory men here in the workforce in this country. That's huge. One out of three, you know.
That is huge.
Well,
we'll
see if it, if the issue ends up with some legislation whether that legislation really addresses the problem at the workforce level or not. Anyway, that's a side comment, I think, you know,
and
people
you had
should
mentioned
be aware
the
about.
Issue of union, the question of unionization. Of course,
yes.
In the United States, we've seen the attacks on unions through the federal attempt to get a federal right to work for less legislation. In Mexico, Peña Nieto has implemented over the past number of years 8 counter-reforms, all, he says, dictated by the modernization of the NAFTA agreement and the Merida plan. And one of them is the dismantling of the labor code in Mexico, which was quite, after decades of struggles in the 1930s, like in the United States, they won significant rights for unionists, pensions, laws that protect the 8-hour day and the rest, even though not always implemented. But that has been scrapped as a result of the NAFTA agreements and the counter-reforms. So we're going to be talking about this issue on both sides of the border and trying to build a real cross-border organizing campaign so that their stories and their battles aren't forgotten in Mexico. And that we have a responsibility as labor movement and community to be on their side and to tell their stories and help them get organized because we're facing the same bosses.
Yeah, and let's talk about that right to work for those who are listening. Right to work is really a false euphemism for union busting. It means that even if you organize a union, people can't join the union, don't have to join the union if they don't want to. In other words, a union shop. And then what comes with that is a weak union, and therefore the union can't accomplish very much if it, isn't able to get people into the membership to negotiate. And it's a way of playing groups of unions off against workers off against others, and just weaken the union. And
weakens, and ultimately, without the funds needed to be able to carry out the campaign.
Yeah, right, right.
The idea
and
that
by
workers
the way,
just get
the
demoralized and they just
right. And the attack on unions is also taking other forms in this country, in the U.S., by attacking the finances of unions in various ways. And now we've got this new movement here by corporations in which I think it's even in the public sector that even in those states where you are able to have a union and have people join the union, in other words, negotiate a union shop where people have to join the union and pay dues, even in those states where there isn't a right to work, in other words, people can have a union and require payment of dues, so the union has some fiscal strength here to represent its members. Now we've got this elimination of dues checkoff going on in Texas and places like that. In other words, you have to run around and collect from every worker the dues, which is impossible if it's a public workers and they're all over the state and so forth. That's another way of going after the finances of unionization.
It's a huge issue for the workers in North Carolina. They're told no dues check off from your paycheck, so that they now have to go into the backwoods of North Carolina monthly to collect from five workers here, seven workers there. It's another form of union busting, as you say.
Yeah, it is. Yes, and it's accelerating, going on. And of course, now that in recent years, even under Obama, they're targeting public workers. You know, that was the last bastion of a significant unionization: transport workers and public workers in this country, because they moved most of the manufacturing base offshore here since Ronald Reagan, and now they're going after that as well. So, you know, there's this massive attack on unionization and collective bargaining. And by the way, it's not just in the U.S. and Mexico. It's global, as you know. Changing labor laws, they call it labor reform, just as they call tax cuts for the rich tax reform. It's nothing about reform in this Trump tax bill. It's all about cuts for corporations and the wealthy. We've been talking about that on the show, and we'll continue. But it's going on everywhere. Change the labor laws in France and Italy, Spain, all these places. It's a general attack on unionization and collective bargaining and organizing by anybody. So people should keep this in context. In the U.S., it's taken the form of expanding right to work to more and more states, which they've been doing. But there's also other offensives on dues checkoff and other forms of debilitating unions in the U.S. going on. It's all part of a general offensive and a way of destroying unions, which they've accomplished to some extent here.
And unfortunately, the union leadership hasn't done much to contest it, to fight it, which is why we're coming together to light
the
fire under some of these officials, so that they either move or get out of the way, because this is ground zero. I mean, this is the moment. If we don't act now, we may not have the ability to come together that we still have, that has not been taken away from us, to organize and to get people into the unions and to make a fighting force that's going to say, we're not going to accept right to work, we're not going to accept the fact that they're going to eliminate dues checkoff. We're going to organize, we're going to mobilize with our community allies, we're going to be there for them when they need it, so that we're not just calling on our community allies to support us, and then we ignore them and their fights, we ignore the issues of housing or the issues of their community, the issues of immigration status. So we're building that confidence in each other, that mutual respect, so that when they see that unions are under attack, they see that they're under attack as well. So that's what we're trying to foster.
Yes, well, you know, the problem has been, since Ronald Reagan, of the leadership of the international, the very high-level leadership, not wanting to embarrass their Democratic Party friends by doing anything direct.
That's the root of the
collapse here. It's because of that strategic choice of, we're going to rely on the Democrats to pass legislation just as they, the Democrats did when Obama came in and had a supermajority in both houses and the Deuce checkoff law got, you know, shuffled away.
The Employee Free Choice Act could have been enacted.
They didn't even take it out of committee, you know. They had the votes. They had the votes. They could have done it. They had no intention of doing it. And we still have the Democratic Party, you know, appealing leadership, appealing to the Democratic Party. Now, there may be some progressive Democrats at the very local level, but as a party at the national level, you can see what the corporate Democrats who took over the Democratic Party lock, stock, and barrel with the Democratic Leadership Conference in the late 1980s and Bill Clinton and all that stuff. And now you see the fight going on in two wings in the Democratic Party, and that's what Bernie Sanders is. He's one of the wings of the Democratic Party trying to reform it, and they keep dumping on him time and his people time and time again, and he's still trying to reform the Democratic Party, which is impossible.
Yeah, but more and more people within his own wing are saying this is a futile effort. You should go independent.
Yeah, so more and more of the people you know who work for him are saying that, and we get these revelations coming through almost weekly here. But nothing's going to change as long as Bernie doesn't say, "Okay, you're right," you know. And Bernie won't say that.
The young Bernie supporters, the Sanderistas have about had it with the Democratic Party. There's an openness and a willingness to listen to third-party options that hasn't existed in a long time, Jack. We're going to have some of that reflected at our conference.
Yeah, because unless you have, you can transform this united front of organizers and real people and real movements into a political organization. Nothing's really going to change, you know. And that has to eventually occur. It's not here yet. Maybe the time is not ripe yet. But part of that movement has to be the people.
The timing is starting to get there. You know, how many more betrayals are needed, or attempts to reform from within? You know, that have been stymied. A lot of people are asking these questions. What's lacking is anybody with credibility to stand up and say we need to form an alternative party of our own. If Bernie did that, he would have huge support. But of course,
he's tied to
the system, and he largely sheepdogs for the system, gets people back and corrals them back into the Democrats, which is where they're betrayed. But there's a lot of thinking, and if we can manage to find some openings here and there, run candidates at a local level, labor community, build labor community alliances like this. These are all efforts that hopefully, as you say, will have to coalesce and come together to build an independent movement and ultimately out of it an independent political party. Otherwise, we are going to be going down the hill even faster.
Yeah, and it's developing. You know, I let me plug Gail McLaughlin's candidacy here for lieutenant governor in California. You know, she's an organizer and a mayor of Richmond, California, and that whole independent political group in the city of Richmond has reformed the city, and now it looks like they're trying to expand that whole model and go beyond just Richmond into some sort of municipal movement and run candidates at the California state level, and that's a hopeful sign, I think.
It's a very exciting development.
Get behind Gail. Let me plug Gail, because I support Gail wholeheartedly here. We need a lot of Gail McLaughlins across California.
Absolutely.
And hopefully we'll get to that point, because running for offices are an important part of the strategy, of course. Just running for office is and nothing else from the grassroots is a dead end as well. But this conference is a good example of grassroots organizing that must continue and expand as well. But folks should just be aware that this union busting, with the Farm Workers Organizing Committee just outright denying them the right to have a union, is at one extreme, but at the other, whole spectrum of anti-union right to work, against dues checkoff, et cetera. And this offense has been going on ever since Ronald Reagan, and now is expanding into new areas where unions still have something of a foothold in trying to wipe them out everywhere and anywhere. But I don't think they're going to succeed in that. But they'll do their best, and until the leadership, you know, I'm talking about the national leadership. You got to make a distinction, I think, between the heads of some of these unions, not all of them, in Washington, and then people who are more tied to the local unions and the labor councils and so forth. There's a big difference, you know. Although the pressures on the labor council folks can be intense from their national leaders at times, you know. So they're sort of between a rock and a hard place sometimes.
Take the case of this conference, labor councils coming out to cancel NAFTA when the officials' position is that we have to work within it, try to tweak it, try to make it better, maybe get some better content laws so that, you know, a higher percentage of work in a given industry takes place in the United States. And that's this is, again, you know, it's hoping that the beast will change its colors, and it's not going to. The NAFTA is not amendable, and to continue to cater to the Democrats in the hopes that it will, it just demobilizes instead of being out there organizing. But the number of labor councils in California, which has taken the lead on this issue for ages, both on the issue of immigrant rights and on the issue of the fight against these so-called free trade agreements, they're not kowtowing to the Democrats on this. They've taken a stand, and it's courageous. I wasn't sure that some of the federations would maintain their endorsements, you know, because we, you know, the pressures, as you say, do come on down. But they've stood firm, and they're coming, and they're participating, and they're helping to build. And I think it's because a lot of these unions realize that things at the top aren't working, so we better try something different.
Yeah, well, it's got to come from the bottom up here, the change, because it's certainly not going to come from the top down. And as you said, I think people are becoming aware of that. But it has to take some organizational form eventually, or nothing's going to happen. You know, all these eruptions and protests, demonstrations, and that don't go anywhere are really containable by the elites in this
country.
Well,
unless they have an outlet, yes, they can dissipate, and they've already kind of the energy was not really bottled up and organized. So it a lot of people have just gotten tired out by being out in the streets and not seeing any change.
Right.
Yeah. Well, we have big challenges, but as long as we have voices like yours on the air and people like the ones who are helping organize this conference, there's a lot of hope. I see a lot of these young people challenging Pelosi, organizing, going out in the streets and doing the Black Lives Matter or the Fight for 15 in a union. Just seeing the organizing effort that they're doing at the LA County Fed, going back and saying, okay, well, they may be coming after our unions, but we're going to do a lot of internal organizing in our unions so that if we get right to work, and that's coming, we're going to go back to our members and involve them, because one of the problems with a closed shop, as you know, is that it just promotes business unionism. The unions get the money, and they don't have to go back, be accountable to the rank and file, listen to them, involve them. They can just take this money and run. And so there's a little bit of a silver lining with this if the unions go back to the members and organize. I've heard it said from veteran unionists that the closed shop is what killed the labor movement. Well, they don't have closed shop in Europe, but there's, and I don't advocate it, of course, because this is how the labor movement's developed, but there is an aspect of this struggle that if the unions go back and rekindle their ties with the members and listen and involve and have to fight to get the union dues might not be a totally bad thing.
Yeah, I know that, that debate that's gone on, you know, for decades. However, in the short run here, you know, you impoverish the unions, you take away their funding and everything in the short run, and it'll devastate them. You know,
that's no question about it. No question.
Yeah, and I think that's more important than the idea of, in the short run at least, of okay, let's
yeah.
send people out to collect dues. They instead of collecting dues, they should be fighting the employers. You know what I mean?
But the argument is not just sending them out to collect dues. The argument is send them out to organize and show that the union's worth something, and so that they can feel confident to join. I'm not advocating this. I agree with you. In the short run, it's devastation. But some of the unions are beginning to do internal organizing campaigns that are have a lot of support and I think are legitimate.
Well, certainly there are trends that, that are positive going on out there. The question is, can the different streams come together in a river here and organize to bring about the change? Because unless these different movements get concentrated, they don't develop a concentrated in a political a united front first in the grassroots movements and then a political party.
That's right.
Nothing's really going to change here, as I see it on the left, and it'll just be a continual retreat, which has been going on for decades now. People should remember there was a time in this country, not that long ago, 1970s, when unions were able to get 25% gain in wages and benefits in the three-year agreement, first year of a three-year agreement, 25%. Does anybody even dream of a 25% raise? Well, when the unions were strong, that's what they were able to get in 1970, 71, 72. You know, and they were so strong, they called on the state, the employers called on the state to freeze wages. That was their only solution. They couldn't deal with them anymore. The unions were too strong. And, of course, that was the beginning of the strategy to bust the unions, which has been going on for quite some time now through various ways. But the unions were very, very successful on behalf of their members a generation ago.
That's correct.
You can see how quickly that has changed since Ronald Reagan and all the rest have gone on the corporations have gone on the offensive in various ways, and free trade is just one way, and right to work is another way, and deportations is another way. It's a multiple strategy that they've got.
That's correct. I wanted to mention just one last thing that we're taking up at the conference, which I left out. And that is the attempt by the administration to modify the TPS, which is the temporary protective status for refugees from Haiti and from El Salvador and Central America. You're talking about 300,000-400,000 people here who've been given extended stays because of the instability and because of the danger that they would face back in their countries. Either through economic hardships or political turmoil and retaliation for having left. Haitians are being sent back. It was announced this past Monday, and this is a huge population, and so are Salvadorans, 300,000 of them. One of the big fights right now is going to be to keep and maintain TPS for these hundreds of thousands of people who've made their homes here, who, when they go back, their countries are devastated. There's no jobs, and they are targeted by the narco traffickers, drug cartels, by the politicians who are often in cahoots with the drug cartels, and whose countries have been economically devastated by these free trade agreements. So it's a death sentence to send
them back. Okay, that sounds important. Again, for those who wish to attend or just link up with this effort, because I'm sure there'll be follow-on efforts to this conference, the phone number to call Hela Lopez is 714-541-0250, and online, hermandazmexicana.org.
That's right, for registration, for more information.
Right, for more information. And those of you who are located, you know, in Southern California or who have a strong interest in this, if you're not, attend the conference. I think it's very important because there will be activities that flow out of this conference that will take it to the next step. And we need more of these kinds of conferences, not just on these issues, but on other issues as well. You know, like how do we reform and make our unions even more effective. Young people are the key. You know, we got to get some of these Fight for 15 and Black Lives Matter and Dreamers Act folks united across their issues, which are important, but can't be fully achieved unless there's some sort of unification. And that's the big change that has to occur. Let's bring these separate streams of protest together under one umbrella, one roof here, and then decide a common strategy and a common organization from the bottom up. You know, I'm opposed to intellectuals, academics, and whatever saying, okay, we're going to form a new party, come on, to Chicago or something like that, you know. Top-down
stuff. It's got to be the product of struggle and organizing from the bottom.
That's right. It's got to be real.
In that sense,
people.
We're very excited. We learned yesterday that two professors from the City College system in Long Beach and the other at CSU in Fullerton are bringing their classes. So we're expecting at least 60 young folks from these two classes to be with us at the conference. They're very excited.
Sounds good.
About learning and organizing. Right. These are professors who are on the organizing mode.
Excellent. Okay, well, I want to thank you very much for attending and giving us this excellent view of what's going on down there in Southern California in terms of, you know, all these different movements uniting anti-immigration resistance and deportations, the wall, NAFTA, farm workers, organizing, boycotts, dreamers, etc. This is all very very positive and great to hear about. And once again, those who are in the area should contact the organizers and bring some of your students, or if you're a teacher, or, you know, bring some of your union members who are fed up and interested, and you know, bring some of your people from your church who are concerned, and attend the conference here, and do something afterwards. You know, we need to do something here. Stop just talking about it. And of course, that's pretty much what I do, talk about it, my age here. But
you're talking about it, Jack, and you're helping to organize. You're giving voice and space to people like me and so many others who you've helped to promote and get the word out. So you're invaluable what you do, and you educate about the issues, which we with information and analysis that we don't get anywhere else. So we all need you, and thank you for your work.
Well, thank you for the comment. In terms of education, we're going to continue next week on this educating folks on this tax bill, this big rip-off going on for the wealthy 1% of corporations. And with the Senate version of this thing, you know, what really upsets me is you hear about, oh, it's a $1.5 trillion bill. No, it's a $6.9 trillion tax cut, right? And what's happening is the middle class and those below are paying for it, all of it except $1.5 trillion. So $1.5 trillion is the deficit. And they're going to make us pay for that, too, by cutting Medicare and Medicaid and some of these other social programs and education. So we're going to pay for it all so the rich folks can get their $6 trillion additional new tax cut after $10 trillion given under George W. Bush and Barack Obama. They need $6 trillion more. Yeah. Okay, so we're going to continue our education on that tax thing next week, and would invite folks to come back to Alternative Visions and check out my blog, jackrasmus.com, where the articles and the previous shows on this theme of the tax cut ripoff are available for listeners. Again, EmandazMexicana.org, conference, Carson, California. All right, this is Alternative Visions, and we'll be talking to you again next week. Thank you.